Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman on this fine Friday.
Happy Friday.
And we're wrapping up towards the end, guys. On the line with us, we've got Buck Gino back of Work in Progress Radio.
Yeah, we're in the home stretch, right?
We're in the home stretch. That's right.
It's a pleasure to be with you, as always, ladies. We enjoy participating on the Union Edge, for sure.
We're glad to have you.
We're glad to have you. And you have a friend with you right now. Good old friend of the show.
The old friend of the show, yeah. Michael Johnston. Michael Johnston is an author. I'll do my best. Labor activist, retired teacher, author, and historian, so to speak, and now county commission candidate, Michael Johnston. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing
good.
Fine.
To be back.
Is it? Yeah, great. Yeah, the only part that I didn't quite understand is that when running for county commission.
I am. Second time.
Are you having fun?
Yes, of course. Doesn't everybody who runs for office have fun?
You got to. That's what gets you have to make it. Enjoy going out and talking to people. But anyway, Michael.
I like that part. That's the part I like the most. The fundraising is the part I like the least.
Yeah, we all have fun. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about history. You know, we were talking on the show last week, and we talked a little bit about there was a series on PBS called The Roosevelts.
I have been recording it. I've been so busy walking, I haven't had a chance to see it, but everything I hear, it sounds wonderful. Of course, Franklin Roosevelt is not only my favorite president, but a very personal one, too. My father worshipped that man because he was the one who saved his life, literally. He was in a mill town in South Carolina. It closed down, and Roosevelt's CCC program, he lied his age, got in, he would send home his little $26 a month wages, and that's what kept his mother and sister alive. So I grew up with stories of Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah, my one of my grandparents worked in a CC camp up in Hesperia, Michigan. There's one up there, so I can relate to that. But anyway, what we were talking about, though, Michael, is that you know, we all come into this thing, you as a candidate and everybody else who is involved in democracy, so to speak, we believe that if we have a vote and we elect leaders, that their job is basically to get things done. And we all complain about...
Yeah, pretty simple, yeah.
But we all argue that... What I was amazed about is that I was hoping for better than that. But if you look back at history 100 years ago, it's not any different. It's not any different
well, that's
than
true.
It was 100 years
and
ago.
It's true. In fact, in a sad commentary is we're kind of going back to the days of not only Franklin Roosevelt, which is the Great Depression. The stats now are identical to 1929, the wealth ratio to the lower class ratio, no middle class, and back to the original Teddy Roosevelt when the robber barons basically ran government. There's so many parallels and similarity, yes.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is we think that as a society we're getting better, but it's worse.
That's it, yeah. I mean, after all, we do have cell phones now that have less service and pay more, right?
That's right. But I guess, you know, that being said, we need to... That's what's so much at stake about this election, right? I mean, this is really a test. If you look at Wisconsin, you look at for the labor movement, you look at Wisconsin, you look at Michigan. You know, I'm in Minnesota, and I was talking earlier today about how great it is. And people, I would talk to the workers at the hotel and Fro Amami, who's the manager, and he's management, and they're all happy.
Yeah, that does happen when you have job stability, good living wages, benefits, a union contract, which is basically, you know, a bill of rights in the workplace. That does happen. I mean, studies have shown that union workers are not only more productive, they produce better quality, but it's mainly because they have better morale. They have a say-so. They're treated as equals. And, yep, that's Minnesota for you. It ranks number one and number two in happiness in the United States. That makes sense. The
most unhappy are the southern
states, the right-to-work states, the poor states, yep.
Sure. It's one of those things when you walk out and you say, man, I'm going to plant a flag, and this is exciting.
Yeah.
It's not like that in Michigan. So, But anyway, you being on the campaign trail, I'm sure you're here because you have to select a political party when you run for county commission. And so
I do.
You go out and you talk to people, and you know, no matter what they say, national politics always comes into play, right, when you're talking to someone?
It's true. It's true. I haven't run a lot into that. I mean, I haven't run into that a lot, going door to door at the local level. A lot of folks, truthfully, a lot of folks really are not engaged until about, you know, maybe 2 weeks before the election, when the barrage of corporate funded ads, you know, flood the airwaves, and you can't help but think about politics. There's been a trend for probably since Ronald Reagan was president to discourage people from voting. We know that the lower the turnout, the more chance that the most conservative get elected. And that has been a conscious effort to convince people that, you know, your vote doesn't count. It doesn't matter. We now have Citizens United and McCutcheon rulings that say that corporations are people. And, of course, my little campaign that cost me $5,000 last time, I mean, they can fuel their candidates at millions of dollars. And so people are basically kind of saying, it doesn't matter. But it does matter because 2 years ago, on the tiniest of budget with the fewest of volunteers, I won an election day with 5 votes. And then there was a recount, and I only lost by 29, and I was up against a corporate-backed candidate. So it really does matter, despite everything that we've been told, that your vote doesn't count.
Well, how many voters would tell that, so the listeners have a perspective of that? How many were the total votes in your election?
There were 14,500 that voted, and the difference between the candidate that won and me who lost, I won in 5 votes on the election day and lost by 29. So there you go.
Well, I would argue you didn't lose, you won, because that gets to the bigger question is, you know, I think Charles has had some on the show before, but why is it so important, we as the labor movement, those of us who are out there participating, why is it so important that we get into office?
I got to tell you, the background is this. Labor union members vote at a higher rate than the general public. You know, that those union publications, those local meetings, they seep into the brain. The power on the job seeps in the brain. People feel more empowered, so they use it. The more people are empowered, the more chances they're going to vote. That's union members in general. Why union members running for office? Well, for one, we tend to be more up on it. And secondly, we understand the power of politics. You know, going back 100 years, Samuel Gompers, and he was the first president of the American Federation of Labor, he said, you know, reward our friends, punish our enemies. Business has been doing that for a long time.
I think
government controls so much. With labor, we learned that in the 1930s, you coordinate, you get your PACs, your political action committees, you don't take it out of dues money, and you get people involved. We know that, and we know it works. Minimum wage, unemployment insurance, 8-hour day, time and a half, every single thing that has created the middle class.
You know, I had an idea for a local candidate. Do you have a Walmart or a box store in your jurisdiction?
In Kentwood, I have. So let me see. I got to think. In my 13th district, I don't actually have in my 13th district. Across the street, there's a Meijer, but they're unionized, so that's a good thing. No, not in my 13th district. My 13th district is pretty much small business and suburban homes, condos, and apartments.
Would you propose language to charge them excise tax if they were paying their worker slave laborers enough that they had to be on the system?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, Walmart is notorious. I mean, the statistics are out there. The studies are out there. They wouldn't have a workforce if we didn't subsidize them with food stamps and WIC and whatever there is. And they tell their people, you know, we're not going to pay you this. You just go out and get this help. You're right. It's really a tragedy, and it hurts our union, big box store, which is Meijer's, because they are unionized. Meijer's pays good insurance, it has good insurance, but they are fighting to compete with Walmart. Walmart is a race to the bottom. Meijer's is not a race to the bottom, but they have to compete. It's really a stability in the neighborhood. The sad thing is that you know, good employers who pay circulates the economy. 70% of the American economy is consumer spending. Who spends more, that good living wage, union wage person, or the person right. who's the multimillionaire who stuffs his money away in the Cayman Islands or buys a Rolex from Switzerland? The truth of the matter is it's the 70% of the consumers. It's patriotic. It's a good thing.
That's right. But you know what, the thing of it is that, you know, I know we're coming up on a break and we want to take a break, but I want to talk about this more, about the importance of union members taking on the responsibility of running for political office and why it's so important. With that, this is the Union Edge. Thanks for listening.
Meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat. Or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job, every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families, just like yours.
Every day, I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
for
at
those
5.
Caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Me, a cat, moving in with a single guy. At first, I thought it might be a little weird, but turns out it's actually pretty amusing. For instance, like my human's gotten so used to me being around, sometimes I think he forgets I'm here. He'll get up for work, shower, shave, and come out with no pants. Plops right down in front of the TV. Hello, there's a lady in the room.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. My name is Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets and Buck Gino. Buck, welcome back to the Union Edge.
It's always a pleasure, ladies. I really enjoy these Friday afternoons. It's good to be with you.
We do, too. It's nice to have you. And, Buck, who did you bring with us today?
I got Michael Johnston. Michael's, as I said earlier, is a longtime activist, retired teacher, author, and then also, you know, a political candidate, but he's been in the movement for as long as I can remember. And we're talking today a little bit about history, but also before we went to the break, we started to talk a little bit about why it's so important for union members to run for political office and or get on school boards and anything that we can, zoning, planning, anything. Why is that important, Michael?
Well, you know, we tend to be more global. We tend to be more rooted in the community, again, because we get training in our shops, our workplace, we know a lot about business. And let's face it, business is a big part of government. I noticed that about a half dozen teachers are running in Michigan now for State House. Well, okay. The reason that is because the people in Lansing passed about 95 bills aimed at teachers and public education. Just awful, awful, mm-hmm. awful bills. And the teachers understand how important it is to educate our children. They're right there. They're in the workplace. There was legislatures that were there was one or two in Lansing. And they're running now to say, look, we understand what it's like there. And they're union members and they're going to tell, like, for instance, I was there when they were doing the cyber school voting. Here's right. The legislature, dominated by one party, especially Republican Tea Party, and even they only passed the cyber school bill by 4 votes. And what it was get home, get on the computer, get their high school degree, their just staying at home. And anybody knows anything, common sense is that students need the socialization, they need the interaction, they need the variety, and then most important, they need, you know, teachers who can help digest that information. We're not Luddites, we're not against computers, but to be the sole thing all day, now we hear that they've taken and abused it. They have a first shift and a second shift, and they get the per capita for, you know, a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon, $14,000. And the bottom line is we hear that the students, after about 2 months, they get weary of that. I mean, it's a computer, and they go back to their home schools, and the per capita stays with the business. It's a travesty. It's a scandal. But that's why we need teachers, union teachers. That's why we need union building tradesmen. They understand. They understand safety laws, workplace laws. They're doing the work. They've seen the people fall from the scaffold. Cheap work that employers will hire the cheapest people they can get, threaten them with firing. I have so many stories where people have been forced to work even though they know that it's dangerous.
Well, I think that, you know, I think that more people are being in tune to organized labor. You know, you just look at the minimum wage issue where you have 60% of the people or better support a raising of the minimum wage to $10.10 right away instead of going through this process from 8-10 or whatever it is.
And so that would have gone through, and they knew it. In Michigan, it would have gone through. There was a petition drive. It was doing very, very well, and they cut it off. They rapidly got together and did a minimum wage law to subvert the one that was going to go to 10-10 and did it over 3 years to 9-something. The pressure, just that alone, forced them to raise it. They would never have done anything if it hadn't been that. Organized labor always managed to put pressure, and that's what we're about. We're the countervailing force to corporations and the folks that back them who race to the bottom. We're the pressure up, better wages, social security, retirement. We understand that the economy grows and flourishes. You know, you're in Minnesota right now calling from there.
Sure.
Paul Wellstone, he's my mentor. He's the one that got me involved in running for county commission. He said, we all do better when we all do better.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I was saying that earlier today. If you were up here, I think Angela or somebody mentioned the fact that or Brittany, that some of these other politicians should drink the Kool-Aid that these guys have or these people. It's just amazing difference. But I know we're getting up close to the end, Michael. I want to give you some time to, you know, if somebody wants to get involved in your campaign and how they do that, and there you go. The floor is yours.
Oh, that's great. I'm on Facebook. You know, that's the communication tool. It's Elect Michael Johnston. And if it's local folks, I'd love to have you come. We're doing door-to-door. Always can use $5, $10 donations. You know, at this level, that small amount helps tremendously. My opponent is going to be funded by the same folks that did Right to Work here in Michigan. I know it. We've just got some information on that. So if you want to set a $5 or $10 or whatever, we appreciate that. It's all legal and we'll document it. And that is 3934 Old Elm Drive, Southeast, Kentwood, Michigan, 4512, and we'll acknowledge that on our Facebook, and if you don't want us, that's fine too. But all the help again, grassroots is really what it's like here in Michigan. We're running good labor candidates at the school board level all the way up to the governorship, and every one of those people running is pro-labor, and a lot of us are right out of the ranks of labor. And we're going to turn this state around because we have no alternative. You need to just only look at what happened in Wisconsin and other states that have been just Indiana and the southern states. The race to the bottom does not help people, does not help states, and it certainly doesn't help the country.
You know, one of the things, Michael, I was wondering, are you still running into a lot of people, you knock on their door and they're not registered to vote or not?
No, I haven't found that. Well, part of the reason is I don't go to I go to those that are listed as progressives, liberal, slightly left of center. I go to moderate Republicans too, and I have, this is a list of voters, so I don't know. In our area, from basing it on the last two turnouts, it's pretty much typical of every area. During national political campaigns, the vote goes up, and the off years it goes down, and that's really a lot of times what hurts us is the low voter turnouts in the off years and why they're more important.
So you're out there every day doing your best to get everybody to vote.
Absolutely, I am. Absolutely, got magnets, magnetic strips on my car, leafleting, going door to door.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, it's anywhere in the country. That's why we need. That's the importance of having.
Yes, everywhere.
And so,
labor has always been involved in politics.
Michael, thank you.
From the very beginning in the 1830s, the workies, the one that said, we need free public education, and they got their people elected in Massachusetts on free public education and the child labor as early as the 1830s. You know,
Michael Johnson, most folks don't know.
Union?
Just like the old days, Michael.
Exactly. Unions, voting, democracy, they go hand in hand. They're entwined. Benjamin Franklin, 1786, supported the striking workers there in Philadelphia. And he wrote the Franklin Typographical Association bylaws. You know, unions, union members, voting, it's all entwined. It's patriotic. Without unions, Americans will, democracy will die. Just look and tell our listeners, look on the internet and you'll see a cause and effect. The higher the unionization rate, the higher the productivity and quality and the voting rates. The lower lower the voting rates. It goes hand in hand.
Michael Johnson, thank you very much. For Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Spears, you've been listening to The Union Edge. Labor's Talk Radio, and we appreciate you listening.
Now here's a dinner I wish I could have attended. According to Associated Press, it was an elegant evening of fine dining in New York City's très chic Tribeca neighborhood. Celebrity chefs prepared a sumptuous spread of international cuisines for this truly unique ballet for the taste buds. The feast was called, quote, a transforming dining experience. Actually, it was not so much transforming as it was mind-bending. The dinner was hosted by McDonald's. The fast food mega chain of cheap eats was making yet another stab at enhancing its image, this time by trying to convince reporters that its food is actually healthy, fresh, high quality, even worthy of gourmet dining. Thus, the scribes were treated to such dressed-up dishes as Kung Pao chicken made with the chain's chicken McNuggets, enoki made with McDonald's French fries, and a pumpkin spice dessert fashioned from its biscuit mix. The closest I've come to such culinary pretension was years ago when I reluctantly agreed to judge a spam cooking contest, choking down bites of spam fricassee, coquille Saint Spam, and spam spumoni. It was the food equivalent of dressing a pig in an evening gown. Some things are simply what they are, and it's best that we not pretend to fancy them up. Nonetheless, McDonald's richly paid honchos keep trying to elevate their corporate image from fast food purveyors of fat and sugar to, as the Tribeca Gourmet event tried to claim, an Epicurean establishment offering good food served fast. Their attempts, though, are all smoke and mirrors, rhetoric and stunts. The CEO proclaims nonsense like this: we've got to make sure the food is relevant. This is Jim Hightower saying, get real. Whether trying to gloss over its exploitation of low-wage workers or its health-challenging Big Macs, the McDonald's image won't change until the corporation does.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hotel workers in Los Angeles won a major victory as the LA City Council voted this week to raise the minimum wage at large hotels to $15.37 an hour. That vote was 12-3. Already, some hotels are threatening to sue to block the wage hike. The council members who voted for the wage increase say it will lift thousands of working people out of poverty. Rachel Torres is an organizer with the Raise LA Coalition.
A lot of hotel owners already pay this wage and want to see uniformity in the market. But of course, there are those who want to, you know, stand on the wrong side of history and sort of believe that poverty way to go. The city also is going to be looking at a citywide proposal. So unlike years before, they had said, oh, why are you targeting one industry? Well, in fact, the city is going to be looking at all industries, and we believe that the hotel industry is the first industry that can afford it. It's seen record profits, but I believe that, you know, setting a strong precedent in a strong industry will help mobilize and help move forward the citywide proposal that the council and the mayor are really eager to push forward as well.
Torres says labor activists who made this happen in Los Angeles are hopeful that it can inspire similar actions across the country.
We're hopeful that if we can do this here, that we set a strong precedent, not just for our city, but for the county and for other cities across the country to do that.
The $15.37 an hour hotel minimum wage in Los Angeles is effective next July for hotels with at least 300 rooms. A year later, it will apply to hotels with at least 150 rooms. The United States is moving to enforce labor rights provisions in its trade agreement with Guatemala. Radio Labor's C. Marie Ainsborough reports.
Unions fighting to help workers in Guatemala have won a major victory. The United States government has announced that it will begin the formal process within a trade agreement to investigate labor rights abuses in Guatemala. This is the first time the United States has used the disputes mechanism in a trade agreement to investigate the enforcement of labor rights. The decision comes after a long campaign by the largest union federation in the United States, the AFL-CIO. 6 years ago, the Federation partnered with Guatemalan unions and filed a petition alleging widespread and serious labor rights violations. One of the charges against the Guatemalan government is that it has not investigated numerous murders of union leaders. The legal proceedings initiated under the provisions of the trade agreement with Guatemala initiates an arbitration process which could force the country to live up to its promises to respect labor rights.
Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Live nationwide weekdays noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Union Edge Talk Radio Show. Often robust, but always respectful. Standing up for your working family.